Matthew Stafford with time. Dancing around. End zone throw. Catch made. It's a Lions touchdown. Marvin Jones. Stafford. Catch. Theo Riddick. It's going to be a touchdown Lions. Stafford's going to throw. Kenny Golladay leaps for it. He held on for a touchdown Lions. Incomplete. And intercepted. Miles Killebrew is in for a pick six.
You got to play four quarters. We couldn't get out of our own way early on, but our defense kept us in it. You know, we were able to put some points up there in the second half, and then our defense, you know, added one there late, which was awesome. So just a total team win. I mean, it took everybody. It wasn't pretty. You know, we're a resilient group. Everybody is. Just kept our head down and kept plugging.
It's good to get some results from your work, and it's something that we've been working on a while and just not quite getting. But the guys did a nice job. I caught the ones that were thrown to them when they had the opportunity. Our defense played well all day long. They played tough. They played hard. You know, we had a lot of guys contributing. So that was good.
Deshaun Kizer going to keep it and sneak for the touchdown. Got the playoff in time. Looking left, throwing on the slant. Did he get in? Penalty markers fly.
I think it's
a touchdown. It is. Corey Coleman.
I've said it over and over and over again that as a quarterback, it's your job to put your team in a position to score points and win games. There's some drives that we're proud of that we're heading in the right direction on, but there's also some lulls within the game that we got to try to cut back on. Obviously, this is all going to be a learning process. You know, we're comfortable. We're moving. The momentum's back in our way. That's how we need to play at all times. The run's complementing the pass, the pass is complementing the runs. We're taking what's given. We're reading defenses the way we are, the way they're supposed to. And obviously, that leads into a clutch touchdown.
It was awful. We got beat by a good team, very good team, and a quarterback that was dynamic. I thought our defense hung in there against, like I said, a very good player. Offense was bad, and so we're going to do what we can do, and that's go back to work as hard as we possibly can, start and figure this thing out.
Moore steps up. High throw, and it's intercepted. Picked off. Tyreek Kittle. He's got a convoy. He's got the end zone. That's a Michigan touchdown.
We grew an experience. You know, a lot of things for each individual player to think about in a number of ways of playing a football game. There's things that you can't experience until you experience them. Handling your emotions, handling a week of school, being in that environment, that atmosphere. There's nerves, there's butterflies, and you get experience on how to handle it. Me, I'm 53. I mean, it's gone dead. I'm dead in here. It's like burnt wood, you know, in terms of nervousness and butterflies and emotions that way. Guys that are doing it for the first time or the second time even, take some time on task. Take some experience. We got some more of that today.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Yeah, buddy, what's going on? Welcome to the Extravaganza right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. We are Toledo's sports leader, and you know what all of that football in the montage means, don't you? It's football for... What? It's Monday afternoon quarterback!
Grab your helmet. You're going in. It's time to play Monday afternoon quarterback on 106.5 The Ticket.
Yes, indeed. You know what we do on Monday afternoon quarterback, looking back at all the games in the weekend that was on Saturday and on Sunday. And my goodness, we got a lot of stuff to get into today. Thanks so much for being a part of it. Right here on The Ticket, it is indeed a Monday afternoon quarterback. I almost called it a football Friday. That's what we do before all of the big games, of course, which we just had. But my, really great stuff yesterday. I don't know who I'm more impressed with, by the way, when it comes to the Lions and the way they played in their season opening win over the Arizona Cardinals. I don't know if it's Matthew Stafford who's supposed to do the things that he did. After all, he's the highest paid player in the National Football League. Or how about your boy Kenny Golladay just laying out on a tremendous, a second of his two touchdown catches on the day. The rookie doing some great work for the Lions. There was a lot of great work done in a losing effort by the former quarterback of the Central Catholic Fighting Irish and Notre Dame Fighting Irish. How about Deshaun Kizer in his NFL debut against the Pittsburgh Steelers, nearly completing an improbable and impossible comeback? As it turns out, it was impossible. They could not quite get it done, but they came within a whisper of maybe getting one more shot, one more possession to move the ball down and try to kick a come-from-behind game tying field goal against those Steelers in the season opener at Cleveland Brown Stadium. Moral victories do not exist in football as far as I'm concerned. You can take your moral victories and stick them, but I'll tell you what, the Browns looked better than advertised. No, let's say the Browns looked better than expected. I did not expect them to be that competitive in this game. I jokingly put a Facebook a message out after the first series, which went, help me out, see if I can remember this, Kush. I believe it went incomplete, no, run for like a yard, then a sack for like minus six or seven. It turned out to be third and 16 or 17, I think it was. Then incomplete, then the blocked punt, touchdown Pittsburgh. I think that's how the opening series went for the Browns against the Steelers.
Yeah, that sounds about right to me. And you know, I'm sitting there watching this thing and like, oh, well, this is just dandy right off the bat.
Yeah, dandy indeed. It was horrible. I immediately tweeted, or not tweeted, I Facebook posted, the Cleveland Browns would like to thank you for attending the 2017 season. Please drive safely. I mean, that's it. Season starts that way. Season's over. That's just the way that it is. So we got a lot of that to get into today. The Buckeyes on Saturday night, prime time. Time to really make a statement to those who feel like maybe they are the best team in the country. They were number two consensus behind Alabama coming in. They were number two after week one, a moderately impressive win over Indiana. And they needed a statement win over a top five team like Oklahoma to really solidify their position, and a statement was indeed made. It was not a statement that anybody wearing scarlet and gray wanted to hear. And that statement is, JT Barrett isn't very good at the quarterback position for the Ohio State Buckeyes right now. A second statement is, the Ohio State Buckeyes pass defense isn't very good, and Baker Mayfield literally had his way with it. Another statement would be, the Buckeyes, maybe, just maybe, are going to miss the likes of Curtis Samuel more than a lot of people realize. They are always reloading, always retooling. They never really have a down year in terms of talent. But I'll tell you what, maybe, just maybe, it's going to take a little bit of time for it to come into fruition and to flourish and to erupt, I guess, onto the scene the way Ohio State and Urban Meyer needs it to, particularly if the pass defense is going to be as atrocious as it has been in 2 weeks. Giving up tons of yards and touchdowns to Indiana is one thing. To Indiana is one thing, then allowing Baker Mayfield, who is a legit Heisman candidate, to do it 2 weeks in a row. Let's just put it to you this way. As we break down some of this, if you're looking for Ohio State's rankings in pass defense, if you're looking through the national statistics, here's what you want to do. Go right to the bottom of the CFBstats.com page, CFBcollegefootballstats.com page, under pass defense, and scroll all the way down to the bottom, because that's where Ohio State will be going into the third week of the season. Ranked dead last in the country, 130th, allowing 403 yards per game. Again, Baker Mayfield is one thing, Indiana's another. The fact that they happen both back-to-back weeks is, of course, a major, major concern. And finally, to get the opening montage out of the way, how about your boy up in Ann Arbor? Jim Harbaugh and the Wolverines are 2-0, ranked number 7 in the country, despite, I think, what most Michigan fans would even agree was something less than a stellar effort against the Bearcats of Cincinnati. Cincinnati, I want to say they were 30-point dogs going into this one up in the Big House, Jim. I think it was a 30-point spread is where Vegas had the line. Can you confirm or deny?
I will double-check that for you. That sounds right, though.
Yeah, I think that's what it was. It was somewhere in the neighborhood of 30, and Wolverines did not play like 30-point favorites. They did not. They did not throw the ball like that. They did not run the ball like that. They did not
32.5.
What was it, Joe?
32.5 coming
32
in.
32.5. And while, again, it was a solid victory for the Wolverines, it was by no means a dominant. It was by no means, in my opinion, this 36-14 win over Cincinnati was in no way, shape, or form indicative of the 7th-best team in the country. So there might be a little bit of reputation and name and Harbaugh name recognition included in that ranking. But the Wolverines, I thought, took a little bit of a step back. The week one win over Florida was more impressive than the week win two over Cincinnati, and they have Air Force coming up next.
Yeah.
So, Yes, Jim, go ahead.
No, it was. It was a decent outing again from them. They got some things early, and Cincinnati's, you know, they may be in the American, which is technically a mid-major now, but they're one of the better programs usually in that rung, but an overall decent.
But when it's a 32.5-point spread, mm-hmm. they're not great this year. Let's be real.
Right.
I mean, you're right. It's a better program than, you know, a lot of quote-unquote mid-majors. And Luke Fickell's a great guy, but, you know, there's a reason why Michigan was favored by 32.5 in that football game.
Yeah. No, there absolutely is. And we saw flashes of why, but not the full ensemble.
No, not at all. Not at all. So there's any number of directions to go with this because we had two really big football games to talk about. Three, if you want to talk about Notre Dame, by the way. And I think nobody's favorite guy, Brian Kelly, the head coach at Notre Dame, who I honestly think ought to be scrubbing toilets somewhere. Not just because of how he coaches, but because of how he treats people. I have just had about enough of the Notre Dame head coach. And I would hope that most Notre Dame fans feel the same way. You know, I know he's frustrated, but maybe that's because he's not doing a good enough job. And there's no maybe about that. He's not doing a good enough job. Notre Dame football is nowhere near what Notre Dame football should be, is supposed to be. You know, and every program can fall through some of that, obviously. You know, Michigan fell through some of that with the Rich Rod and Brady Hoke years. Nebraska football hasn't been the same in a long, long time. You know, Penn State fell down for a long time, although they're back up in the top five now. USC. I mean, everybody goes through it, even the elite programs, the elite of the elite. But that doesn't give you the license to just act like the biggest, most pompous ass, I think, working in coaching today. And that includes NBA and Greg Popovich, who's a pompous ass. That includes the NFL. Pete Carroll, in my opinion, is a pompous ass. That includes other college coaches. Nick Saban can be a pompous ass. I don't care who you are. I don't know anybody who is worse than Brian Kelly. The man is just a walking menace.
The changes changed the culture, everything. But obviously, you lost in, at the very end, kind of like last year, 7 of 8 losses.
How do you, What's the question?
I'm getting to it.
Get to the question.
How do you keep this from snowballing?
It's like not going to snowball. Next question.
Well, what exactly will be different, I guess?
There's nothing different. I go to work every day, and I coach my football team.
Okay.
Is that good enough for you?
Yes, I was just asking about how it was different from last year's losing by one possession.
Okay.
And tonight was also like that, so I was just wondering.
Losing by one possession?
Yes.
No, it was 1 point.
Okay.
Okay, great.
I'm telling you, there are times, Kush, where I say this. It's a good thing I'm not part of the press pool anymore. And I used to cover post-game press conferences like that. I did them for Major League Baseball teams. I did them for NFL football teams. I've done them for the NBA. And I've done them for college sports. Many of us in this business have been in that job, you know, where you're part of the press pool of reporters.
Oh, sure.
I don't know what would have separated me from him, and it wouldn't be his podium. I don't know what could have held me back. And I'm not trying to be Mr. Tough Guy. Believe me, I'm not. I'm not internet muscles guy. I would like to smack him in the mouth. I don't like him. I haven't liked him since they hired him. I didn't like him when he was at Cincy. I haven't liked him ever. But since he got to Notre Dame, it's been 10 times worse. You don't need to treat people like that. What that reporter was asking, and I wish I knew her name, what that reporter was asking was a very legitimate question of the head coach at Notre Dame, saying last year you lost a number of games by one possession, and that could mean anywhere from 8 to 1 point. A one-possession game, of course, being a touchdown and a two-point conversion, so it could be 8 or it could be 1.
Right.
She said you lost a bunch of those last year, and she's right. And so they lost one now against Georgia. Pretty legit question from a knowledgeable reporter. You lost a lot of games in the last possession or by one possession last year. Now you've done it this year. How are you going to stop that from snowballing like it did last year? First, he interrupts her question. Won't even let her get it out, right? Then she gets it out, and then he mocks it and says, it won't snowball. okay, how? I asked you how that's going to happen. Because I show up to work and I coach my team. Does that answer your question? Okay, I was just pointing out that last year you had a lot of one-possession losses. This year, you just had a one-possession. It was 1 point. Well, that adds up to one possession, you pompous ass.
A ton of changes, changed the culture, everything. But obviously, you lost in, at the very end, kind of like last year, 7 of 8 losses.
How do what's the question?
She just asked it, jerk. 7 of 8 losses last year, 7 of them were by one possession. That she just asked the question. Now answer it.
I'm getting to it.
Get to the question.
How do you keep this from snowballing?
It's not going to snowball. Next question.
That's not an answer to her question. It's not going to snowfall. Snowball is not an answer to how is it not going to snowball. How do you stop it from snowballing this year? How do you stop that thing from building on itself and happening again and again? It's not going to. That's not an answer.
Well, what exactly will be different, I guess?
There's nothing different. I go to work.
There's nothing different? Then that means it will snowball. It snowballed last year. She's asking you what's going to stop it from snowballing this year, and you say there's nothing different. So in other words, it will snowball again this year.
I work every day, and I coach my football team.
Oh, so that's what's going to make it different, the fact that you come to work every day and coach your football team. See, if I was a reporter, being the smartass that I am, I would have sat there and said, oh, so you're saying there won't be anything different? So in other words, last year you didn't come to work and coach your football team? Are you acknowledging that you laid down on the job last year? You see, because last year it snowballed, 7 out of 8. Last year it snowballed, coach. You said this year it won't snowball because you're going to come to work and coach your football team. Okay. So you didn't come to work and coach your football team last year. That's what I would have said. I would have gotten thrown out probably, but I would have embarrassed the hell out of him, and he deserves not to wear that ND on a vest or on a jacket or on a pullover or on a hat or any oil. He is just a jerk.
Okay.
Is that good enough for you?
Yes.
No, it's not good enough. You're a tool. It's not good enough.
Yes, I was just asking about how it was different from last year's losing by one possession.
Okay.
And tonight was also like that, so I was just wondering.
Losing by one possession?
Yes.
No, it was 1 point.
Hey, BK, how many possessions do you need to get 1 point? Would you say...
Ooh, I know!
Would you say one, maybe? Right? Then it's a one-possession loss. You flaming bag of dog poop. I don't like the guy. I can't stand the guy. And look, I'm not a Notre Dame fan. Okay? I mean, I'll root for them to a degree, but I'm a Big Ten fan. I'm an Ohio State fan. I like to see Michigan win. I'm not one of the, diehard haters. I like to see Michigan win because I like the Big Ten to do well, and I love that Michigan and Ohio State are both relevant national powers again. It's a great thing for the sport. And I'll root for Notre Dame in certain matchups. But, I don't live and die with the Irish. But I can tell you this. If I'm an Irish fan, I don't want him representing my team. He's not a good coach. His track record at Notre Dame is mediocre at best. And for him to act like such a pompous jerk the way he did to that reporter, to me it just stains the Golden Dome. Touchdown Jesus is putting his hands down a little bit because he's not very pleased. Just telling you right now, Brian Kelly should be gone. If anybody at Notre Dame even cares at all about your reputation, let alone your success of your football program, he brings you neither. He brings you neither success for your football program nor pride nor respect for your university, especially when he talks to people like that. Dump Brian Kelly's A. That's all I can say about it. Elsewhere, if you want to throw it in there, because we always like to follow our good friends at the MAC, your Toledo Rockets are now 2-0. Logan Woodside threw for 232 and a couple of touches. They beat Nevada 37-24 on Saturday, so that's good to see. Unfortunately, your BGSU Falcons are 0-2 on the season, as BG dropped one to South Dakota 35-27. So there you go. You got your OSU. You got your, boy, a lot of losses. A lot of losses for the teams that we follow. Only Michigan really is Michigan and Toledo.
Yeah, Michigan and Toledo. Everybody else college-wise lost.
Yeah, Ohio State lost. What about Sparty? I'm sorry, I forgot.
Oh, you know what? I forget what happened to
Sparty myself. Sparty did not play, that's why.
Ah, that makes, okay.
Yeah, Sparty had a bye, it looked like, in week number 2.
I thought there was something missing.
Yeah, me too. I'm sitting there going, Notre Dame, Ohio State, Michigan. Oh, yeah.
No, wait. Sparty beat Western 28-14.
They did. I thought they had a bye.
No.
Oh, okay. No, see, well, I just checked their schedule real quick, and I guess it just didn't show the updated score yet.
Yeah. Yeah, they beat Western Michigan 28-14. Obviously, Western's not going to be anywhere near the undefeated regular season team they were a year ago.
I clicked on the wrong page. That's my bad. It was a 28-14 defensive kind of struggle win. That's exactly what it was. Okay.
I'm missing something. Sparty's on bye week this week because I'm not seeing them.
Yeah, I looked at it wrong. That's my bad. That's on me. Okay, no problem. So there you go. So you got 2-0 Sparty, 2-0 Michigan, 2-0 Toledo. You got 1-1 Ohio State, you got 0-2 Bowling Green, and you got 1-1 Notre Dame. So there you go. That kind of covers pretty much all of the bases there. We're not done talking about college football, by the way, because we have to talk about Ohio State and whether or not Urban Meyer wants to keep JT Barrett as the starting quarterback of the football team. JT Barrett struggled in a big, big way against Oklahoma in that nationally televised loss. Baker Mayfield outplayed him. Baker Mayfield embarrassed the Ohio State defense.
I see a mentally tough guy he's got to play better. We got to play better. We got to coach better. And it's very mature guy. You know, he's kind of seen it all. You know, but I worry about that now with JT, but with corners, that's a tough position. You're out there on an island, and a corner loses confidence. And you know, that's what coaching is, though. That's our job too. And I had a good meeting with our staff about inspire and motivate and move them on. You know, we can't, as awful as we feel, no one's really asking how we feel. We got to move forward, and they're the ones out there doing their job. We got to make sure that they're in position.
So there's Urban Meyer talking about JT Barrett, called him a mentally tough guy who's been through it and who has seen it all. So he still believes in him. He said he does have to play better, but we all have to play better, and we've got to coach better. He believes that JT Barrett is still the man for the job, even though a lot of Buckeye fans are calling for Urban Meyer to pull the trigger on a switch, put Dwayne Haskins back or in as the starter. And, you know, it's really a bad time for Joe Burrow to be injured, Kush, because Joe Burrow has been waiting patiently for his opportunity, and it could be now if he hadn't been injured and thus passed up on the depth chart by Dwayne Haskins, because I think Joe Burrow would be the next guy in line if some kind of a change were to be made. Okay. It is 3:30, so how about we talk a little bit more about the NFL schedule in addition to the college game. We're going to talk about the Browns' loss to the Steelers coming up with our friend Dennis Maniloff here after the bottom of the hour Sports Center. And you know what the first week of the NFL season being in the books means, right? It means it's time to look back and see how your fantasy team did, and it means it's time to look forward to next week's fantasy team. You see, because you get to change it when you play fantasy football on FanDuel. That's right. One of the biggest fantasy studs this week was, as expected, Antonio Brown of the Steelers did indeed exploit the Browns' thin secondary, as I thought, to the tune of 11 catches for a $182. One of them, fantasy studs was demanded in the form of the highest-paid player in the NFL, the Lions' Matthew Stafford. He delivered 4 touchdowns in their comeback win, and one of the fantasy studs was not expected at all. Chiefs' third-round pick, former Toledo Rocket alum Kareem Hunt, put up 246 yards and 3 touchdowns on the board in his NFL debut. You think you can predict who the studs will be this coming week? Well, that's the fun of fantasy football on FanDuel, and if you're good, you can win cash. FanDuel is fantasy football for everyday fans. New contests starting every week, which means no busted seasons. Change your lineup as often as you want. There are lots of contests to choose from, too, starting at just $1. Pick a contest, choose your team, then watch your score in real time. And I'll tell you something else. I'm toying with the idea of starting our own listener league up at FanDuel. If you want to play against one another and me, hit me up and let me know, and we'll put together the league right there at FanDuel.com. Over 2.5 million players have won cash prizes playing fantasy football on FanDuel. Sign up today. Go to FanDuel.com. Click the Join Now button and use my code FRANTZ, F-R-A-N-T-Z. If you're a new user, you'll get free entry into the NFL Sunday Million. That's over $1 million in cash prizes when you make your first deposit on FanDuel. So just go to FanDuel.com, sign up with the promo code FRANTZ, F-R-A-N-T-Z. That's FanDuel.com, promo code FRANTZ, void where prohibited. Maniloff joins us right after this on ESPN 106.5, The Ticket.
Once again, it's the Bob France Extravaganza, ESPN 106.5, The Ticket.
Yes, indeed. Rolling onward, 3:39. Thanks for joining us. Massive, massive Monday afternoon quarterback conversation today. Buckeyes go down big time. Baker Mayfield planting the OU flag in the middle of the horseshoe, apologizing for that today. JT Barrett essentially apologizing for his play. Urban Meyer saying he's mentally tough. Hopefully he will be able to bounce back from that. Yesterday, of course, Lions were the big win over the Cardinals. Matthew Stafford doing what the most highly compensated player in the history of the National Football League ought to do, And the Cleveland Browns, surprising a lot of people, not by losing. They have now lost 31 of their last 35 games against their quote-unquote rival, Pittsburgh Steelers. Can't even call it that anymore, but they are geographically close to one another in the same division. That's the only thing that makes it remotely a rivalry. But the Browns did take some positive steps. Do you believe in moral victories? If you do, you got to be happy with what happened yesterday at First Energy Stadium. Joining us now to talk about it is our good friend Dennis Maniloff out there from the Cleveland Plain Dealer and Cleveland.com. D-Man, what's going on, brother?
What's up, Bob? Thanks for having me on.
Do you believe in moral victories or not, or is there no such thing?
In professional sports, you generally don't, but in the case of the Browns, in this stage of the build, when you have a 21-year-old quarterback who shows some signs, then you can start to maybe pull some strands out of that game and say, you know, something along the lines of a moral victory.
All right. I can live with that because I felt the same way. I mean, after the way the game started and thus the season started, I believe it was run for no gain or maybe 1 yard gain, then a sack for a loss of 6 or 7, then an incomplete pass, and then a punt block for a touchdown. I immediately went to Facebook and said the Cleveland Browns would like to thank you for attending the 2017 season. It's over. I mean, I was just, you know, that's just so Browns. But then suddenly, somehow, the game continued, and the Browns started to show something resembling a defense. Matter of fact, they probably limited Pittsburgh's offense to less production, I think, in the first half than they got against Pittsburgh's defense led by that 21-year-old starting quarterback. I did see some things that you can take away, you know, from this game, Dennis, not thinking, okay, here we are on our way to another 1-15 or 2-14. If you're a Browns fan, you had to walk away from that going, we look like a professional football team.
Yeah, I mean, certainly the defense, like you said, impressive, and didn't have Myles Garrett. And, I mean, you sit there and you go, okay, if the Browns had Myles Garrett and he played anything like T.J. Watt did, what would the outcome have been, perhaps, you know? So, and of course, the Steelers fans will snark, oh, we would have won anyway, fine. That's great. But, listen, here's one thing I do want to say. I'm tired of watching the Browns special teams mess up. I mean, listen, I've said to you on this before, on the air before with you, mm-hmm. It's one thing when you're building, you can make excuses or rationalize for an offense's growth or a defense's growth. There's no excuse. I don't care what stage of a build you're in. I don't care how bad you are. There's no excuse for crappy special teams. And time and time and time again, the Browns special teams over the years, certainly since 99. I mean, they'll point to some numbers that say they were really good on special teams, you know, in the early stages since 99. But I'm talking primarily the last 5 to 6 years. Terrible special teams. And it cost them again yesterday.
I would not disagree with that at all. Let me go back to the defense, though, before I start talking about more about Toledo's own DeShone Kizer, Central Catholic product DeShone Kizer. But let's talk about the defense. To what do you attribute that performance? Is it more of Greg Williams and his impact, or they've obviously added a lot of new personnel? Myles Garrett was not there. Jabril Peppers was. I thought he played very well. It's such a very strange scheme, by the way, having him, the free safety, some 25 yards off the ball. Almost looks like 11 on 10 at various points in that. But you had some new blood as well with McCourty and Abadi Calhoun and younger guys, some veterans kind of mixed together. What was it that made the defense look so much more aggressive and so much better, quite frankly, than they really did at any time a year ago?
Well, I mean, I would like to say, of course, Greg Williams, because Greg Williams, to me, is a difference maker as a defensive coordinator. He would then, of course, say, you know, hey, it's about the players. You know, you have to have talent. So it's a combination of talented athletic players, which, as you said, is a nice little blend of the veterans and the youngsters, guys who understand the scheme or are understanding the scheme each day better and better, what Williams wants them to do. And then, you know, you couple the talent with Williams' mind and his approach and his, you know, eat nails for breakfast attitude, and there you go. I mean, it was an excellent performance on balance, although they gave up a couple of, you know, big plays to Antonio Brown. But what do you, I mean, Antonio Brown is great for that reason. I mean, he's good. He's a great player because he makes plays like he did Sunday, and he was the difference maker in the game.
Completely agree with that. Dennis Manilov is our guest talking about the Browns. We're going to talk about the 18 wins in a row Indians in a moment, too. We're trying to stay focused on football. We do Monday afternoon quarterback on Monday's D-Man. So let's get to the offensive side of the ball. What is it that DeShone Kizer has that so many rookie first, or in Kizer's case, second-round draft pick, but, you know, high draft picks, they have been looking for the guy to lead them for so long. They've gone the free agent route. They've gone the draft route, obviously, and they just cannot seem to find the guy. This has to be the most encouraged any Browns fan has been for a new quarterback to add his name to the bottom of that crazy long jersey with all of the quarterbacks' names since 1999. He looked better. He looked sharper. He looked just different. Define different. What does he have?
Well, it's certainly, well, first of all, he has the power arm. You know, he has the size and the power arm that is going to be necessary if you are going to cut it in the AFC North. You saw yesterday some hits that he took where he got up and continued. In previous years, those types of hits would have knocked out a Browns quarterback because a Browns quarterback was not big enough and strong enough to absorb the hits. That is a very underrated but very important part of trying to quarterback, certainly in this division, with defenses like the Steelers and the Ravens and the Bengals. So you have the physical attributes and the ability to throw the ball down the field with velocity, the ability to get the ball outside the numbers with velocity, which is almost just as important these days. You've got to be able to get it over there before the corner can turn his head or before the safety can get there. Kizer's shown the ability to do that. And then you have the mental side. I mean, he looked to me like he belonged on an NFL field. And I mentioned his age, 21. I mean, he's 21 years old. I'm not making excuses, but I'm just sitting here going, I mean, this is a very young guy. He's young. You know, when I hear young rookie, I think it's redundant. He is a young rookie, okay? So he processed the game well, I thought, from what I could see, obviously, on TV. I'm not down there. I'm not in the meeting rooms. I'm not in the headset. I don't know all that. But he certainly looked like things weren't moving too fast for him. I mean, you look at just the first play of the game, Bob, his first drop back. He wants that easy out cut to Coleman just to get his feet wet. And the Steelers have an idea that that's happening, so they bait him into it with a zone blitz, and they drop, I think it was Chickalo, drops back over toward the sideline to essentially bracket cover Coleman, and Kizer, instead of forcing that throw and saying, all right, I'm just going to get the first one out of the way, he sees that, and he tucks it and runs. Now, he only got 1 yard, but it could have been a disaster. He could have thrown a pick on that very first play. Now, little does he know, a couple plays later, the punt's going to get blocked. The point is, right out of the gate, you could see him processing the game, and those were the encouraging signs. Now, there were negatives. Granted, he locked on receivers, stared them down. He held onto the ball too long, which cost him a couple of sacks. He missed some throws, but what do you expect? I mean, the guy's not supposed to come out against the Steelers in his very first start and dominate. At least I didn't think he was going to.
No, I completely agree with that. And, you know, we also have to talk about his weapons. I talk about this all the time. It's one of the weakest receiving corps in the league. Corey Coleman finally did something positive, productive, caught that slant, which put them within one score potentially of tying the game. I'll give him some credit for that. Kenny Britt, how much did they give him? What was it? Was it $32 million or something stupid? I don't know exactly. I don't have it in front of me, but I want to say it was around $30 million for 3 years to bring Kenny Britt, a career number two receiver, over to be a playmaker. And the guy had a horrible preseason, and it continued into the first game of the regular season with a crucial drop. Would have been an 18-yard gain if he hadn't gained another yard after the catch. They can't keep relying on him, can they?
I wonder. You know, I hate to say Dwayne Ball all over again, but oh my goodness. I mean, yeah, that drop was egregious in the middle of the field, right on his hands. There were defenders there to make the play, but it would have been at least a first down and maybe a few more yards. It's disappointing with Britt. I like you mentioned Coleman. He showed me some things yesterday. I was happy as a Brown, you know, as a, if I'm a Browns fan, and as a Browns follower, I'm sitting there going, those were encouraging signs from Coleman. He made several catches in traffic, absorbed the hits, held on to the ball. You know, I thought he did his job. You know, and you talk about the inexperience of the receiving core. You know, Duke Johnson's a guy they're trying to get into the slot, all right? So I'm watching a game yesterday, Duke Johnson, the running back, and there's a, you know, an important pass. I can't remember the down. I thought it was third down. It was a short down and distance, and Kaiser has the read. He has the hot read, and he throws the quick slant, and it was intended for Duke Johnson. And I think it was William Gay jumped the route and dropped the pick. So people are saying, oh, terrible throw by Kaiser, terrible throw by Kaiser. Well, I go back and I watch it on the DVR, and Duke Johnson did not finish the route. He sort of drifted on it. He didn't cut. He sort of looped. And that enabled Gay to jump in there into the vacated space. Kaiser put the ball where it was supposed to be, but Johnson didn't get there. So that was an example of what you're talking about with inexperienced receivers or receivers not doing their jobs. Can sometimes make the quarterback look bad.
And that's something not a lot of fans notice, by the way. They see a pick or they see a play that looks like a bad overthrow or a bad underthrow and think it's all on the quarterback, and they may not know it might be a route that was broken off that shouldn't have been, a route that wasn't completed, or whatever the case might be. So it's good that you bring that up in Deshaun Kaiser's case. What do you see going ahead here? I mean, again, there are no moral victories, particularly at the professional level, but Hugh Jackson has to be feeling better that, you know, especially the way the game started out, it just they could very easily have crawled into a hole and said, oh, my God, how embarrassing, what a terrible start. And they fought back. So going into Baltimore now for week number two at Baltimore, another division game, you know, it's weird, Dennis. I don't think the Browns really ever should be talking about, you know, division losses and how they can impact the standings. They've never really been a part of the standings for 20 years. It's just always been, can they build a little bit? Can they win a game or two to get toward respectability, toward mediocrity before you start talking about contending? It's kind of weird to say this, but they do start out with two straight division games. They have a little bit of positive to build on in game number one. Do they carry that through in game two, and can they win in Baltimore?
Yeah. Oh, you know, I wish I hadn't seen the highlights and the score from yesterday's Baltimore at Cincinnati game, because, you know, going into the season, I'm sitting there going, all right, the Ravens, you know, they talk a great game, but how really good are they? And is Flacco on the decline, and how's his injury situation? And they go to Cincinnati and punk them. What was it, 20-0? I think, yeah, was the final. Yeah. So, I mean, that's
Andy
not
Dalton
an encouragement.
Had a 0.6 in the quarterback rating, by the way.
Dalton, yeah, well,
0.6.
I mean, I honestly don't know if that's how bad the Bengals are or how good the Ravens were, but probably a little of both. But when you shut out a team in their home opener, season opener on the road, then you got to give, you know, you got to get your props for that. So the Ravens are obviously a good defensive team. It's going to be a tough assignment for Kaiser, and it'll be the Ravens home opener, so there'll be a lot of hoopla, and those players are going to be, you know, sky high and all that stuff. I mean, he's got to, I would imagine, get through the first quarter without a disaster. And I don't like the Browns' chances, but I'd rather have a test like this coming off the Steelers game than some, you know, team that's just as bad, let's say, as the Browns. I'd rather see them go up on the road against a team that's opening at home and has just come off a shutout, because I want to see what Kaiser can do. I want to see if he can answer that challenge.
Completely agree. Dennis Manilef is our guest. Dennis, before you go, I want to ask you about the unbelievable. I mean, two wins away.
You getting rid of me already, Bob? We're just warming up.
Well, no, we got about 5 minutes left, but I want to spend that five minutes shifting away from the NFL, which is, you know, against my standard Monday practice, which is Monday afternoon quarterback. But how do you ignore? You can't ignore a team with 18 consecutive victories. And the next three against the Tigers, and I know our Tiger fans don't like hearing us talk about this sort of thing here in Northwest Ohio. We're at home of the Mudhens, but I mean, I think it's Kluber, and it's Carrasco and it's Clevinger. Carrasco,
Kluber, Clevinger. Yeah.
Yeah, Carrasco, Kluber, Clevinger. How does this not become 21 wins in a row the way they have been going?
Yeah.
I mean, Dennis. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I don't have a specific question because the obvious question is how. How did it all come together so well, offensively, defensively, the formula of getting a lead early, getting dominant starting pitching, the best bullpen in baseball, getting crucial hitting, clutch hitting at the same time as getting sometimes, you know, bombardments of teams. You know, I think I saw going into yesterday after 17 straight wins, they had outscored the opponents somewhere in the neighborhood of 118-30 in the streak,
yeah,
which is just sickening dominance. I don't have a specific question. Just talk about this thing, Dennis.
It's incredible. Yeah, the differential is now 121-32.
Okay.
So it's just remarkable. I mean, you know, a lot of people going into the season thought the Indians were going to be very good. All right. I said, believe it or not, the Tigers were going to win the division. I looked horrible on that pick. I've long since owned it and shamed it. But I don't even think that the most optimistic Indians observers heading into the season could have seen something like this, a run like this. Because don't forget, they've won 18 in a row, but they also won 9 in a row after the All-Star break. All right? So they have a 2 of 9-plus since the All-Star break. They were 48-45 after a 1-5 disaster in the Bay against Oakland and San Francisco. They're 48-45. They're 87-56 now. And people will say, wow, you should have just, you know, you shouldn't have panicked back then, or you shouldn't have questioned them back then. They were questioning themselves. I mean, the Indians were having meetings. They couldn't understand what the problem was. They were like this, you know, this Rolls Royce that just couldn't get into the right gear. They were just kind of stuck in neutral, and they couldn't figure out why. And all of a sudden, you know, it clicked. But they weren't guaranteeing that it was going to. You know, Terry Francona was saying at 48-45, hey, there's no guarantees we snap out of this. I sure want us to, but there's no guarantees. But then they ripped off a 9-gamer coming off of the Bay disaster. They won 9 in a row to get their footing. Then they, you know, teetered a little bit, and then they started that sail bombardment in, I believe, August 24th, 13-6, and they haven't lost since. Just a combination of dominant starting pitching, dominant relief pitching, and a lineup that is relentless. And I've done a study on their, you know, their contributions during the streak. They've had 35 players contribute, okay? And that includes Danny Salazar, 2/3 of an inning, 4 runs. I mean, he participated in the streak, okay? There have been 35 participants. On the position player side, 18 guys. And all 18 have at least one hit and one RBI.
Wow.
And I think 17 of 18 have an extra base hit and a walk. So guys are, you know, Francisco Lindor has 8 homers during the streak. I mean, last night you saw on national TV, Roberto Perez makes it 2-1 with a solo home run. Everybody that Terry Francona runs out there is contributing. And I know Trevor Bauer, who, by the way, has 4 wins during the streak, he said it best last night in his postgame presser. He said, look, we don't go to the park thinking about the streak. We just go to the park having fun with each other and playing the game and the game in front of us. And that's critical because they don't feel this pressure that everybody expects it to. You feel the pressure. You feel the pressure of extending the streak. No, these guys come in and they're loosey-goosey every day, and they just play the game on the schedule, and so be it.
Dennis, I want to ask you one more question about this team, but not until I remind everybody about where to watch their football tonight and every night, and that's at B-Dubs all season long. They are going above and beyond at B-Dubs. Countless taps and HD screens. Well, that's a given, but the entire place is now committed to creating the perfect atmosphere for watching football, food and drinks included. The classic menu item called up is the 35th Wex sandwich, and they're also featuring the limited time only Blue Moon barbecue sauce, which is epic. There's more, but you got to come in to find out. To the place place with the best football experience going. It's Buffalo Wild Wings, wings, beer, sports. Please drink responsibly. Hey, Dennis, the one thing I think about when I look at this and I say, you know, as of, I want to say, July 1st, I think it was, they were 11.5 games behind the Houston Astros in the American League. They now own the best record in the American League, 30-9 since that time, obviously the 18 in a row. And you think, my God, they've proven to be a team without a weakness. I think they said that at the end of the ESPN broadcast last night. They're a team without a weakness. But my problem, my concern, my fear, whatever you want to call it is, you can't expect to do this through September and October. The old "are they peaking too soon" thing just cannot, I can't get it out of my head. Once they lose, is it going to lead to a run of losses? And is it going to lead to a, I don't know, a belief that there was just something magic in the air during this month that this went on, but that they can't replicate it when they need to in October?
Well, let me real quickly before I answer that, Bob. The Indians are 5 games behind the Los Angeles Dodgers.
Yeah.
For best record in the majors, and of course the Nationals are 4 games back. But I mean, imagine that. The Dodgers have lost 10 in a row in 15 and 16. So the Indians have picked up by my.
I can't fathom that, Dennis. I mean, a team
while the Indians are winning 18 in a row.
We talked about a team that might have set the record for single season wins, 15 out of 16. I'm sorry, go ahead.
It's incredible. No, but to answer your question, I know there are people that are subscribed to that. If the Indians fall in the playoffs, they're going to say, see, they picked too early. I don't buy it. I've talked to, you know, hundreds of major leaguers in my career and in my professional writing career, and they almost every single one of them said, look, what do you want us to do when we get to the ballpark? Okay. Do you want us to throttle down because we're winning in September and maybe we don't have to based on the standings or based on the fact that we clinched? Do you want us to just go out there and lose? I mean, you know, for the sake of not peaking too early, and it's a solid point, obviously, because they're the ones that are living it. They're the ones doing it. These guys have said to me, we just go out and play the game. We try to win it. And then when the playoffs roll around, we do the same thing. It doesn't matter. So the outcomes in October, it's not going to be, if they're not favorable to the Indians, it's not going to be because they peaked too early, simply because you're trying to win every game you play, with the exception of...
And I don't think anybody means you shouldn't try to win every game so you peak later. I certainly didn't mean it with asking the question. I just mean, you know, you peak when you peak. You play your best when you play your best. It just happens that way, that everybody's hot at the same time. You can't control it. I'm not suggesting they could or should try to control it.
Okay.
I'm just, from a prediction standpoint, they can't play any better than 18 wins in a row, other than to do what I just said and sweep the next series against the Tigers and make it 21 in a row. They can't play any better than they're playing now. It just, I wonder if it's going to be harder for them in October when it's not all going great guns at the same time to find a way to grit and gut out wins that right now they haven't had to because they're just winning by massive margins on a regular basis.
I get your point, but there have been close shaves in this run here, and last night
was one. Yeah, get it. Sure.
Now, granted, when you're watching the game, you're thinking the Indians are going to win when they're up 1-0, or in this case, they were down 1-0. But you're thinking, no, they were up 1, then it was tied, then it was 2-1, 3-1.
Yes.
But you're thinking as soon as the Indians get a lead, they're going to win. But the reality is, not all of these games have been blowouts. Two of the three Orioles games were competitive, as an example. You know, they've had to win games late. They haven't had to come roaring back with these dramatic comebacks. But to your point, to your overarching point, I'd go back. If I'm the Indians and I'm worried about perhaps peaking too soon, I'd just go back to last year. They ripped off that 14-game winning streak. There were still plenty of games left in the regular season. And so they had cooled off after that 14-game winning streak. They weren't destroying teams up until the playoffs, and yet they were able to go to the World Series. So you can peak at various, I don't think you can have one peak. I think you can have multiple peaks or multiple hot stretches during a season.
And that's the answer. Ultimately, that's the answer to the question.
Because
they can't carry this between now and all the way through. It's just not possible. So once the cool down happens, can they find a way to heat back up and get that peak, if you will, back again later on? And that's what we're
You know why? You know why I think they can, Bob? Very simple. Uber Carrasco Bauer. That'll heat you up in a hurry.
That's a great point, my friend. Dennis, always a pleasure. I do have to kick you now, brother, because we're already past our top of the hour. But thanks so much for visit. As always, we'll talk again soon.
Thanks, bud. See you.
You got it. Hey, don't forget, coming soon, your chance at $1,000 four times a day. The 4K a day starts Thursday, the 14th, from Toledo's ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Back after.
Matthew Stafford with time. Dancing around. End zone throw. Catch made. It's a Lions touchdown. Marvin Jones. Stafford, catch Theo Riddick. It's going to be a touchdown, Lions. Stafford's going to throw. Kenny Golladay leaps for it. He held on for a touchdown, Lions. Incomplete and intercepted. Miles Killebrew is in for a pick six.
You got to play four quarters, and we couldn't get out of our own way early on, but our defense kept us in it. You know, we were able to put some points up there in the second half, and then our defense, you know, added one there late, which was awesome. So just a total team win. I mean, it took everybody. It wasn't pretty. You know, we're a resilient group. Everybody is. Just kept our head down and kept plugging.
It's good to get some results from your work, and it's something that we've been working on a while and just not quite getting. But the guys did a nice job. I caught the ones that were thrown to them when they had the opportunity. Our defense played well all day long. They played tough. They played hard. You know, we had a lot of guys contributing. So that was good.
Deshaun Kizer going to keep it and sneak for the touchdown. Got the playoff in time. Looking left, throwing on the slant. Did he get in? Penalty markers fly.
I think it's
and
a touchdown.
Touchdown. It is. Corey Coleman.
I've said it over and over and over again that as a quarterback, it's your job to put your team in a position to score points and win games. There's some drives that we're proud of that we're heading in the right direction on, but there's also some lulls within the game that we got to try to cut back on. Obviously, this is all going to be a learning process. You know, we're comfortable. We're moving. The momentum's back in our way. That's how we need to play at all times. The run's complementing the pass, and pass is complementing the runs. We're taking what's given. We're reading defenses the way we are, the way they're supposed to. And obviously, that leads into a clutch touchdown in the fourth quarter.
It was awful. We got beat by a good team, very good team, and a quarterback that was dynamic. I thought our defense hung in there against, like I said, a very good player. Offense was bad, and so we're going to do what we can do, and that's go back to work as hard as we possibly can, start and figure this thing out.
Moore steps up. High throw, and it's intercepted. Picked off. Tyreek Kittle. He's got a convoy. He's got the end zone. That's a Michigan touchdown.
We grew in experience. You know, a lot of things for each individual player to think about in a number of ways of playing a football game. There's things that you can't experience until you experience them. Handling your emotions, handling a week of school, being in that environment, that atmosphere. There's nerves, there's butterflies, and you get experience on how to handle it. Me, I'm 53. I mean, it's gone dead. I'm dead in here. It's like burnt wood, you know, in terms of nervousness and butterflies and emotions that way. Guys that are doing it for the first time or the second time even, take some time on tasks. Take some experience. We got some more of that today.
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Yes, indeed. Rolling on again. Hour number two at 19 minutes after four. A little bit late here because we broke a little late from the top of the hour, the first hour, I should say, of the program today. But our Monday afternoon quarterback does continue, and you heard a lot there in the montage. The Lions win, the Browns lost, the Buckeyes lost, and the Wolverines win in that order. So we got a lot to get into there. And I think, Jim, the most pressing issue that we want to talk about has got to be the plight of the Ohio State Buckeyes and their star quarterback. When I say star, I'm going to use that term a little loosely right now because, well, I mean, let's just be realistic here. JT Barrett struggled. JT Barrett struggled very mightily in this game. A lot of people would say he has continued to struggle since last season, in which he was not very accurate. When it comes to the deep ball in particular, but just overall accurate as a passer. And he has been a very, very enigmatic guy. He's a guy who it's hard to believe when you talk about this in terms. It almost sounds like a pro career.
Right.
Because he's been there so daggone long. But 3 years ago, he was, you know, the toast of Columbus. He was a guy who, you know, probably would have been on the stage at the Heisman Finals as a finalist because of the great season he had as a sophomore. But he gets hurt, doesn't play in the playoffs. Cardale Jones wins the national championship for the Buckeyes, or as the quarterback of the Buckeyes. So obviously 2 years ago, he comes in as the starter. JT Barrett has to earn the job back, which he did, but wasn't the same guy he was, the same dynamic runner and passer overall that he was as a sophomore. Then you get to last season, which now there's nobody to share the job with the way there was the year before. You know, it's just all his to take those giant steps again. And instead, you know, he takes a step back last year. Even though the Buckeyes go to the playoffs, he just isn't the same, you know, passing force that he was. And a lot of people were surprised he decided to come back to Columbus as a fifth-year senior, but there's a reason why he came back to Columbus as a fifth-year senior. There's no place for him in the National Football League. Not with that kind of passing accuracy or lack thereof. He's one of these great athletes who can throw it a little bit, who can run with it a little bit, or maybe quite a lot. But it's not the kind of a thing that the NFL is going to be very excited about. So he comes back, and Jim, what did I say to you in the spring? What did I say to you a few different times when we would update the Ohio State roster and depth chart in the summer in camp? I said, and I even asked Paul Keels this, and, you know, some people might say it's a stupid question. And this is JT Barrett, for crying out loud. All-time school leader in touchdowns and yards and this and that and the other thing. And I said, am I crazy for wanting or for wishing that JT had tried his lot with the NFL? Because I wanted to see Joe Burrow get a chance as the starting quarterback? Because I wanted to see something a little different than what we've seen in the last few years with Ohio State? Because I wanted to see a true passer, a drop back into the pocket kind of a guy, a pro-style quarterback that can just sit back there and with the weapons that Ohio State puts out there, pick teams apart. And, you know, Paul kind of, I don't want to say dismissed it because that would be rude, and Paul Keels is anything but rude.
Right.
But he pretty much said, no, I mean, this is JT, and this is where he should be, and this is the right thing. And I think I may even talk to Lauterbach or Landis about this. And everybody kind of said, no, of course you want your experienced fifth-year senior back, but there was a reason I said it. And I'm not trying to be Mr. Nostradamus here and pat myself on the back at all with this. Believe me, I'm not. But this is the reason. A little bit of what we saw on Saturday night at the Horseshoe against fifth-ranked Oklahoma and Heisman candidate himself, Baker Mayfield, we kind of saw some of the reasons why. I just wanted to see a different passer, if not a quote-unquote better passer, a different passer. And yes, now that we have kind of seen more of it, probably a better passer too under center for the Buckeyes.
Yeah, and this is one of those weird instances, too, where, you know, on the one hand, from the Saturday perspective, having a fifth-year senior is usually a good thing. You know, you want that experience. I mean, this is especially the case if you go down to a Toledo or a Bowling Green level of college football. The flip side of it, though, means if you're a fifth-year senior and you're playing quarterback for somebody like Ohio State, it means there's flaws in your game, exploitable flaws in your game. Otherwise, you would have already gone to the draft. Exactly. And we're sadly starting to see some of these. And it really starts, as you were pointing out, Bob, you know, with the passing accuracy or his lack thereof that we've seen. I mean, you know, just for comparison's sake, both quarterbacks yesterday, not 35 or Saturday, 35 Saturday. Passing attempts. Barrett with 19 completions, Baker Mayfield with 27. And there's really
and
part
touchdowns.
Of your yeah, and three touchdowns. I wouldn't even get to mention the touchdown part, just the accuracy, the same number of attempts, yet eight more completions. And it those kinds of things, you know, add up. I would say the only silver lining, not just for Barrett, but for the entire Buckeyes, is thank goodness this was an out-of-conference game, because they could still, in theory, run the table if they can in the Big Ten and may still have an argument down the line.
My son asked me that, too, as it was in the third quarter and Oklahoma started to really pull away. He said, if we lose this, we're done, right? And my son's 14. And I said, well, maybe, but not necessarily. I said, remember, this is week two, and this is a top five team. If Ohio State goes out and runs it and wins the Big Ten championship, which they are the prohibitive favorite to do over Penn State and over Michigan mostly, you know, the Big Ten, and if they go into the Big Ten championship game and win the Big Ten championship game, which is played right before the voters vote on that committee, I don't think too many teams, or too many voters, I should say, are going to turn away a team that has one loss against number five Oklahoma all the way back in week two.
Even with it
that
being
has
in
run
the
table since and then won the Big Ten championship game. So,
and I suspect
I said,
you're
no,
right.
It's not over.
And I suspect you're going to be right about that, even with the, oh, and that top five team did it in Columbus, not in their yard.
Yeah.
But I got a feeling you're right, that will stick in the minds of voters if it comes
one
to that
loss,
point.
If there's another one-loss conference champion, Power Five conference champion, then the committee is going to look and they're going to weigh the loss against one another,
sure,
probably. And so, yeah, I mean, there's a chance it could, but by no means is the season over. You know, as far as the shot at going to the college football playoff. I want to stay on JT for a second and play a clip. JT Barrett after the loss to Oklahoma.
JT, one of this fan base is pointing the finger at you. How do you handle that? I know that you're aware of what goes on and what people say, but after a loss like this, it's tough enough. But how do you respond when you know that there's a large portion of this fan base that thinks that you're to blame?
That's how playing quarterback works. When you're winning, I get too much credit. I try to, you know, give that credit to the guys around me because that's who, you know, I need 10 other guys to play well. And then when we lose, I mean, I'm the one to blame too. And there, rightfully so, I didn't play well. Just a lot of throws. Like I said, game of inches. And so,
I want to comment on that. What you just heard there was the maturity of a fifth-year senior. You know, to JT Barrett's eternal credit here, he said that's the life of a quarterback. When you win, you probably get too much credit. And when I get it, I try to share it with my teammates because I can't do any without them. And when you lose, he stopped just short of saying you get too much of the blame. And that's where the maturity comes in. Instead, he said, again, that's just the life of a quarterback. He left it unsaid. But it's probably true. Because you know what JT Barrett didn't do on Saturday, Jim? He didn't play corner. You know what he didn't do yesterday? He didn't play safety. He wasn't a part of that Ohio State secondary that got picked apart by Baker Mayfield. You know what else he didn't do? JT Barrett didn't play defensive line or outside linebacker, and failed to get any pressure of any significance for any length of time on Baker Mayfield. The Buckeyes defense did not have a good game either. To put this all on JT Barrett to me is unfair. And I think he did a great job of checking himself there and saying, when we win, the quarterback gets too much credit, and when we lose, well, that's just the life of a quarterback. He just kind of left it unsaid, and I think that's very, very fair to say, and it's also very, very accurate. One more question and answer from JT Barrett after the game.
Well, y'all couldn't get anything going consistently, like, although y'all did come out in the second half after that long kickoff return with Paris and stuck it right in the end zone, the running game, more than anything else. What, from your vantage point, just didn't click tonight, from your vantage point?
I know it's hard to hear. The question sometimes from reporters. Reporters said, from your vantage point, what was it that didn't click tonight? Because he had already said, I missed some throws. So what didn't click tonight was the question for JT Barrett, the Buckeye quarterback.
There were times the receivers weren't open, and they did a good job.
Yeah, so I think, passing the ball, it played a lot of zone coverage. And then just trusting it, guys being in the right spot, things like that. So, and, you know, they play that drop coverage and, you know, force things on you. You got to make sure you trust it. It can't be late. And that's what happened. The one interception, I was late on the backside or on the steel route. So, all those things taken account for it. And just got to make sure better as far as our timing, our spacing when it comes to those things.
So, again, you know, very difficult press conference, obviously, for JT Barrett to navigate through. You know, as the first reporter pointed out, hey, JT, it was a tough loss, but you realize that it's not just a tough loss for the Buckeyes. A lot of fans are pointing the finger at you. And that's a tough thing to say to a kid who's not playing for money yet. The guy's a college student. He's, you know, a fifth-year senior. To hit him with a everybody's blaming you kind of a blast is a little harsh. Not saying the reporter was wrong, but it is a tough thing to ask a guy and a tougher thing to answer, and I thought he handled it very, very well. Let's talk more Buckeyes. Jimmy in Toledo's on hold waiting for us right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Jimmy, what's going on?
Hey, what's up? Listen, Urban Meyer's just been thoroughly outcoached. Big fan of his. I love him. Glad what he done for Buckeye football after we lost Tress, but we got to face the facts, and he's being outcoached. And you can put all the offensive coordinators in there you want, but in the end, they're running his offense, and it's vanilla. You can put all the formations in there you want, but if you're still running the same plays play after play, you know, everybody's ready for it. We're not experts on football. He's obviously forgotten more about football than we'll ever, hopefully, ever know. But we've watched it enough to know what's coming, and you figure the other experts on the other coaching staffs definitely know what's coming. And you can just see it before it even develops. And what's killing me is I love JT. And I went back and watched the 2014 game where he went to Michigan State. Before he was on, before he became like Shawshank Redemption, an institutionalized man. Because honest to God, I think he's regressed since then for the most part, because if you look at him now, he's just a fullback playing quarterback. I think he's too muscled. He lost his accuracy. That kid, when he was a freshman, he was a hell of a lot more accurate, and he had no qualms about throwing the deep ball, and he was fairly accurate. And no, it wasn't just because he had Devin Smith, but he threw the ball around the yard. He was pretty accurate with it, deep. Go back. I tell anybody out there, just go back. If you think JT stunk.
Are you combining those two things? Are you saying that Urban's offense and play calling have made JT less accurate somehow?
No. I'm saying it's a combination of factors, and JT's part of it now. And he's been in the system so long, and the fact that I think he's so muscled up and part of the running is so vital to that offense, almost too vital to where how many times now have we watched him run more than the other running backs combined? That's another stat that came out the other night, that he carried the ball again more than Weber and Dobbins combined, just like the Michigan State loss. When they lose, when they play badly, he almost always runs more than the running backs. And that's a sign of trouble right there.
By design run, though, or by I can't
find I don't care if it's designed or not. If it's designed, it's usually because everybody knows whether it's designed or not, it's not the optimal thing, and
no,
it's another
not,
reason
but I mean,
why.
But it does matter whether or not it's protection.
Well, it plays a part,
or whether it's, you know, the play calling, because you brought that up before.
If it is designed, Bob, I've just noticed he's muscled up quite a bit from when he was a freshman. Some of that's to be expected, but if you look at that guy is huge to be a quarterback.
I think you might be right about him looking, and thank you, Jimmy, for the call.
As well.
You might be right about him looking like a fullback playing quarterback right now, and that's why there is a kind of a loud cry among Buckeye Nation for, you know, a guy like Haskins to get the call. Dwayne Haskins is now the number two with Joe Burrow having hurt himself, and Urban Meyer's going to have to make up his mind on that, or does he still trust and have confidence in JT Barrett? That's only something.
This is a mentally tough guy that he's got to play better. We got to play better. We got to coach better, and it's very mature guy. You know, he's kind of seen it all. You know, and but I worry about that now with JT, but with corner, you know, corners, that's a tough position. You're out there on an island, and a corner loses confidence, and, you know, that's what coaching is, though. That's our job, too. And I had a good meeting with our staff about it. Inspire and motivate and move them on. You know, we can't, as awful as we feel, no one's really asking how we feel. We got to move forward, and they're the ones out there doing their job. We got to make sure that they're in position.
No question about that. So there you go. That's Urban Meyer talking about JT Barrett, his quarterback. Will he remain his quarterback? He says he's a mentally tough guy who's been through it all and seen it all. And there's no doubt about that. It seems like he's been in Columbus forever. What do you say we get you a wild stat?
ESPN 106.5 The Ticket presents The Wild Stat of the Day, brought to you by Buffalo Wild Wings. Wings, beer, sports.
Wild Stat of the Day, the Cleveland Browns yesterday lost yet another opening day to the Steelers, making it an NFL record 13 straight season openers the Browns have lost. In fact, since 1999, the Browns are 1-18 in season openers, with the only win coming in the 2004 opener, a 20-3 win over Baltimore. There's your Buffalo Wild Wings Wild Stat of the Day. Hey, reminder, tomorrow, September 12th, we have got a very important event happening out in Perrysburg from 6 a. to 6 p.m. We are going to be there providing hurricane relief at Walt Churchill's Market, 26625 North Dixie Highway in Perrysburg, collecting items that you bring to fill up a truck donated by Bolt Express to take down to Texas for hurricane victim relief. Some of the items we're looking for include recovery effort type of items, things like shovels, 55-gallon plastic bags, hand tools, gloves, supplies for cleanup, blankets, flashlights and batteries, tarps, those kinds of things. So if you'd like, can help us out at all, please go to 1065theticket.com. You see all the information you need there, and then bring some of these items to Perrysburg, where we will be tomorrow from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m., filling up that truck. Thanks to our friends at Walt Churchill's Market, Bolt Express, Impact with Hope, and thanks to you for being a part of it tomorrow at 1065theticket.com and out there at Churchill's. All right, going to shift gears in just a moment and get into Lions football. They're 1-0 on the season. It was an ugly first half, but a Matthew Stafford-dominated second half. Jeremy Reisman joins us next to talk about the Lions right here on ESPN 1065 The Ticket.
Now, back to Bob France, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
It's good to get some results from your work, and it's something that we've been working on a while and just not quite getting. But the guys did a nice job. I caught the ones that were thrown to them when they had the opportunity. Our defense played well all day long. They played tough. They played hard. You know, we had a lot of guys contributing, so that was good.
I'll tell you who caught him whenever they were thrown to him is Kenny Golladay, who's going to become a fantasy stud for the Detroit Lions. Make no mistake about that. We're going to talk more Lions with Jeremy Reisman coming up. But speaking of fantasy studs, did you get your FanDuel on in week number one? If not, are you ready for week number two? I mean, honestly, take a look at some of the fantasy studs that we did see this particular first week. One of them we expected, Antonio Brown, 11 catches, 182 against the Browns' thin secondary. One of them we didn't expect but demanded, that would be Matthew Stafford and his four touchdowns for the Lions, the most highly paid player in the history of the league. And one of them not expected at all, Chiefs third-round pick, now starter for Kansas City, former Toledo Rocket, Kareem Hunt, with 246 yards and three touchdowns on the board in his NFL debut. That's the beauty of fantasy football at FanDuel. You think you can predict who the studs are going to be this coming week? Well, that's the fun. If you can, you can win cash. Good luck to you. FanDuel, it's fantasy football for everyday fans like you and me, with new contests starting every week. You know what that means? No busted seasons. If you didn't get Kareem in last time, you'll get him in this week. That's just the way that it goes. There's lots of contests to choose from, starting at just a buck. Just pick a contest, choose your team, watch your score in real time. Over 2.5 million players have won a cash prize playing fantasy sports on FanDuel. You can be one of them when you sign up. FanDuel.com, click the Join Now button, and use my code France, F-R-A-N-T-Z. If you're a new user, you get free entry into the NFL Sunday Million with over $1 million in cash prizes when you make your first deposit on FanDuel. Just visit FanDuel.com and sign up with the promo code France. That's FanDuel.com, promo code France, F-R-A-N-T-Z, void where prohibited. All right, let's talk about one of those fantasy studs, or a couple of them actually now, as we talk about the Lions' season opening win over the Cardinals. Joining us is Jeremy Reisman from PrideOfDetroit.com and SB Nation Lions site. Hey, Jeremy, how are you, man?
I'm doing great. How are you doing today?
I'm good, bud. I'll tell you what, you know, we talked about whether or not Matthew Stafford should be the highest paid quarterback in the National Football League, and that's always going to be open for debate. But what you cannot debate is that he earned every penny that he was expected to with the way he played in week number one. A come-from-behind win, a lackluster first half, which seems to be the MO for a long time with the Lions offense under Stafford. But, man, did he play tough with the money on the line. Matthew Stafford with four touchdown passes, a tremendous second half, and the Lions get the win. This is why they paid him, right? This is why they didn't let him go out on the open market. This is why you need a franchise quarterback.
Absolutely. I mean, this is exactly the Matthew Stafford that we saw last year, the one that comes from behind in the fourth quarter. I mean, you look at his stats just in the fourth quarter alone. He was 7-for-8 122 yards, two touchdowns, perfect passer rating. That's what you're looking for in the fourth quarter. That's when games are won, and Matthew Stafford has proven that he's one of the best quarterbacks in the league in the fourth quarter. So, yeah, you shell out as much money as you can to keep something like that on the roster.
No question about it, and we can't let this go by without talking about Kenny Golladay, too. You know, Golden State still led the team in receptions, but Kenny Golladay, the third-rounder, four receptions for 69 yards, two touchdowns, and a phenomenal catch on the second one to really, you know, vault the Lions. I mean, we saw some flashes of greatness from this kid in the preseason games, but now that it counts, I mean, he seems to even stepped it up, you know, a notch higher.
Yeah, and one of the most impressive things, I think, about his performance on Sunday was that he started out kind of rough. He had a couple drops. He had an opportunity to make a big third down catch and it slipped through his fingers. He didn't pick up that two-point conversion. He had a false start. I think most rookies would be pretty frustrated by then. And Kenny Golladay came through in the fourth quarter, which, you know, that's a very high-pressure situation. And when you struggled early in the game, that's a really hard mental block to overcome. And he did it in his first NFL game, so I think the sky is the limit with this guy. I'm very excited to see what he's got going forward.
What do you know about him? I mean, because you're 100% right. It's easy for a rookie to go into a shell after they make some mistakes in the early going. You know, you get a couple of drops, you get an offsides, you know, false start, whatever the case might be. It's easy to say, I got to calm down, I got to take some deep breaths, and just kind of play really conservatively and really modestly the rest of the way. This guy goes out there and outruns the entire Cardinals secondary, particularly for that 45-yard touchdown diving grab at the goal line. I mean, you know, this guy didn't go into a shell. He just said, I'm going to break out open even further.
Yeah, and I don't know the guy personally. I've never met him, but just based on what I've seen on online videos and stuff like that, he seems like actually kind of a very mild-mannered, kind of quiet guy. What you saw out there, he got very, very amped up when he made those plays. So I think, you know, he plays with a little bit of emotion, but based on what we've seen so far, he's able to kind of put that aside when the game's on the line and really focus on his job.
Jeremy Reisman joining us. He writes about the Lions for PrideOfDetroit.com and SB Nation website. Our man Jim Cushman's got one for you to talk about that Lions defense, which was just as big a story as Matthew Stafford was.
Yeah, they forced some turnovers, Jeremy, in this game. Head coach Jim Caldwell, we played some of that audio earlier in the show. Very happy with his defensive effort in this one. And that's going to be something interesting, you know, to see as we go forward, because it's not too often when we're talking the Lions, especially when they do win, it's not as often that we're talking about it was the defense that did a lot of positive things, and they sure did yesterday.
Absolutely, and that was the biggest surprise to me. I picked the Lions to lose this game mostly because of the defense. I thought they were going to struggle early. I thought Jared Davis would go through a lot of early troubles, and he was okay today. On Sunday, but I was just shocked by how well this Lions secondary was. They knocked down 11 passes, had three interceptions. They basically got a hand on one out of every four Carson Palmer passes, and that's just incredible when you consider where this team was at last year. You know, they gave up the highest percentage of completions last year, and now they're getting a hand on the ball one out of every four passes. That's just incredible improvement. And part of it, I think you have to go and look at the game that Carson Palmer had. He was not very good. He was short-arming a lot of throws. He was forcing some throws. There was actually some good pass rush, too, that was forcing him into some of those mistakes. But regardless, this is a team that didn't have a turnover in the final five games of the season, and they exploded with four turnovers in the first game. That's got to be a really good sign for this defense going forward.
Jeremy, you can't talk about that defense without talking about David Johnson and what they were able to do to him. I mean, this is one of the most productive backs in the league from a running standpoint, obviously right up there with Le'Veon Bell. I think most people would agree from a two-way threat standpoint as a receiver out of the backfield, put up tremendous numbers last year. Got nothing against the Lions. In fact, the only thing he really got was hurt. Dislocated wrist, surgery likely. Not sure how long he's going to be out. But what was the game plan that the Lions were able to execute defensively to slow down what was arguably now with, you know, Carson Palmer being up in years and Larry Fitzgerald still being tremendous? But, you know, this is the true best weapon that the Cardinals have. If you want to stop the Cardinals, you stop David Johnson, and that's what the Lions did.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think they brought their linebackers very close to the line there to make sure that he didn't beat them in the running game. You know, he still pulled in six catches for 68 yards. But essentially, I think the game plan was to rely on your secondary to take care of business in one-on-one coverage while your defensive line and your linebackers was basically clogging the middle to make sure David Johnson wasn't breaking free. He only had 23 rushing yards on the day, 2.1 yards per carry. You can't ask for a better performance from your defensive line and linebackers there.
No, you really can't, and it's really an amazing thing, too, when you think about it. Again, and not to mention, notwithstanding, I should say, the 68 receiving yards, which he's used to doing, but how do you hold a guy like that to 2 yards a carry? This is a guy who's only growing in confidence, and I don't know, you might argue that last year was his breakout year and that he snuck up on some people perhaps a little bit. They used him in some ways that people hadn't seen, and now that you get an opportunity to see him on tape a little bit more often, you're able to slow him down, but it wasn't just it was a brick wall. They didn't slow him down. They just flat-out stuffed him.
Absolutely. I mean, the longest run the Cardinals had all day was 10 yards, and that was John Brown. That was the wide receiver, so it was kind of a gadget play there. So, yeah, all credit goes to the defensive line, especially up the middle. There was just nothing there all day, and that goes to credit the Lions' defensive tackles, who I actually think are a little underrated on this team, at least the starters, Haloti Ngata and A'shaun Robinson, both playing at a very high level through the preseason and through week one now. That's something definitely to look forward to for Lions fans. If they can start making teams one-dimensional with the secondary that they have, that now we've seen they can actually make plays on the ball, that can make this defense very, very difficult for some opposing offenses.
I think we would be remiss if we did not mention the Lions' own rushing game, because this continues to be the problem. Everybody has been waiting for Amir Abdullah to be back healthy, because they just had no rushing game whatsoever last year for Matthew Stafford to complement. And I don't know. I mean, it's one game only, but 27 rushes combined for 82 yards is only 3 a carry. Amir himself had a very David Johnson-like 2 yards per carry. So both of the two big running threats in this game were stuffed by the opposing defense. What does that say, big picture, or is there no big picture here, Jeremy? It's just one game.
Well, I mean, you do have to give credit to the Cardinals' defense. It is a good defense. But any day in which the two longest runs by your team were from your quarterback and your punter, that's really, really bad news. I think there is definitely a reason for concern here. I mean, this is basically the same offense that we saw last year. Can't run the ball too much. Protection is okay. Matthew Stafford just has to carry this offense, and that's what it looks like he's going to have to do again. Things may change a little bit when the Lions get Taylor Decker back.
They can't do it all year, right? I mean, they can't rely on that again. This is what the problem is. Even if you do manage to eke into the playoffs, it's all on Matthew Stafford, and that's just too much to ask to do against a playoff team.
Absolutely. You're absolutely right. They need to find a way to get that running game working. The only positive thing here is that they actually have a defense now, at least it looks like through 1 week, which would be a big difference from last year. But essentially, you're talking about a running game that is averaging 2 yards a carry. That's not going to get it done late in games. The Lions were lucky kind of to have that big play from Galladay late in the game because the running game just wasn't working. That's a situation where the Lions absolutely need the running game to work. You know, they're up by 3 or 4 points late in the game. They want to run the timeout. Stafford isn't going to be able to make that pass to Galladay every week. We'd love to see it every week, but it just isn't going to happen. So they're going to have to figure out something. And I think most of the issues are coming from the interior line there. I've only watched the game 1.5 times so far. I think the Lions have work to do with Graham Glasgow at left guard. He's really struggling out there right now. And Travis Swanson didn't have a very good game. So maybe it's just gelling. They need some more time to get together, but they're going to have to figure it out quick because they have a lot of good defenses coming to town soon.
Great stuff from Jeremy Reisman on the Lions. Read him. Read his work at prideofdetroit.com and SB Nation website. Jeremy, thanks much, man, for the analysis. We'll check in again real soon.
Sounds good, guys.
You got it. Thanks very much. Hey, by the way, a reminder, tomorrow from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m., stop by whenever you have time. Please stop by Walt Churchill's Market, 26625 North Dixie Highway in Perrysburg, as we try to fill up that truck from our friends at Bolt Express to take relief supplies down to Texas for the hurricane victims. 6 a to 6 p, ESPN, the ticket will be there all day long. Please come and stuff that truck. If you're looking for ideas of donations, check it out at 1065theticket.com. Drive Time is coming up next with Cushland in for Miller. Stay where you are right here on the